You are listening to BensTorah.com.
What's ever happening today was recorded by Chazal to happen as the divine blueprint before the Mashiach comes. And I follow everything that goes on in Eretz Yisrael. I might be in the West, but my heart is in the East. I'm over here continuously, 24/7. And I want to share with you the Nevuos of Yeshayahu, who quite interestingly, the Gemara says in Bava Basra that when it came to the Seder of Suvim and Nevi'im, they looked at the Seder of Nevi'im, Nevi'im Afronin. And when it's listed in the Gemara, they say the system is, you start with Yirmiyahu, you go to Yechezkel, and they end off with Yeshayahu. And the Gemara asks a very interesting question. If we're going in historical order, Yeshayahu HaNavi came historically before Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel. Why is it mentioned afterwards? So the Gemara has a very interesting statement. They say the end of Sefer Melachim ends with Korban, Rachmana Litzlan. Yirmiyahu is a Sefer dealing kulo b'Korban. We then go to Yechezkel that starts off with Korban and then discusses Geula, Nechama. And then we come to Sefer Yeshayahu, Kula Nechemta. It's one big Nechemta dealing with Geula. And for that reason, it's mentioned last. But the question everybody asks, that's quite obvious. In all of the 60 chapters we have in Sefer Yeshayahu, it's not all Nechemta. It's not all Geula. He's very open about the concept of Korban, destruction, Shemama, and therefore, why did Chazal say when it comes to the theme of this Sefer, Kula Nechemta, it's all one Nechem? Very strange statement, but we have to understand it. And it's interesting, the Shiva, the Nechemta we have when it comes to the 3 weeks, what Sefer do we use? Sefer Yeshayahu. So I want to share with you today, and listen to me carefully, because this relates specifically to our period of time as well, as you soon go to see. A Gemara at the end of Masechtas Makos, where the Gemara describes, after Korban Bayis Sheni, how a number of the greatest Tanoim and Klaios attained to see what happened to the Beis HaMikdash after the Romans destroyed it. The Gemara tells us Rav Gamaliel, Rav Elezer ben Azariah, Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Kiva wanted to see what the Romans did to our beautiful second Beis HaMikdash. When they arrived at location, they came to Har Zeisim, they taught Kriya upon seeing the Churban. As they got closer to the actual Har Habayis, you had a very unusual phenomenon take place. Three of the four Tanoim started to cry bitterly. Rabbi Kiva, all of a sudden, had a smile on his face. And quite obviously, the other three Tanoim were simply astonished. They said to Rabbi Kiva, look what's happening over here. Shulam Hilchubo, the desecration of the Makom HaMikdash, wild animals, foxes, are desecrating the Kiddush HaKadoshim. Kozalo Karabo, a person who is not halakhically allowed cannot enter the Makom HaMikdash. It's sacrilege. How in the world are you smiling? You should be crying. And Rabbi Kiva turns to them and says, you want to know the answer why I'm smiling? Let me quote to you a pasuk from Sefer Yeshayahu. And once I finish explaining that pasuk, you'll understand why I have a smile on my face. Listen very carefully as I describe the narrative. So the Gemara says, the Rekiva quotes a pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu, Perichas, pasuk Beis, if you want to look it up. And this is the pasuk that Rabbi Kiva quotes. Or evilly Adam Neamonim, Esporia Hakoyen, Ezekiel Yahu ben Yivarech Yahu. I'm giving you Adis of two great Nevi'im, the Nevuah of Uriah and the Nevuah of Zechariah. And quite obviously, the question is, why did Yeshayahu HaNavi combine the Nevuahs of an Uriah who was a Navi in Bayis Risha and Zechariah who was a Navi in Bayis Sheni? What is the connective link that Yeshayahu HaNavi brought them together? Listen carefully. So says Rabbi Kiva, if Yeshayahu HaNavi brought these two Nevi'im together, there is a tliya, an interaction, an interdependence between the Nevuah of Uriah and the Nevuah of Zechariah. Now, what are their Nevuahs? Listen carefully, I'll tell you where I'm taking you from if you want to take notes. When it comes to Uriah's Nevuah, it's contained in Sefer Micha, Perigimel, Pasuk Yudbeis. L'chein begalalchem tzion sada tifaresh. The Rebbeinu Shalom said, because of the sins of Klal Yisrael, the Beis Hamikdash will not only be destroyed, it will be plowed asunder. Nothing will be left. Even by the Kiddush HaKadosh and Mizbeach, everything will be plowed asunder. Then we come to the Nevuah of Zechariah. He's talking now by the beginning of Hakamas by Yesheni. Oh, Yeshu is the Kainim, the Zekainos, the Refavos, Yerushalayim. You're going to have a time that the Jews will return to Eretz Israel. And they're going to build beautiful parks as we have today throughout Eretz Israel. Ish Mishanto Biyodom Yerav Yomim, they're going to live a long life. They're going to walk with their walking sticks, as they came in with, to show that they need a little more help to be able to manipulate themselves. Urechayva Sahir, Yamalo Yaladim Vyaladas, Misach Dibarachavaseha. And Kindleak children, we playing in the streets, playing in the parks. Every time I walk through the Yerushalayim, through a park, and I see what's happening, this pasuk comes to my mind. You all see it, you all experience it, despite the tumult going around us in the rest of Eretz Yisrael, the world at large. So the question is, and this is the question Rabbi Akiva had to explain, what in the world is the pasuk concerning churban have to do with a pasuk for a nevuah dealing with geul? This seems to be a very intricate interrelationship. But we have to know what that interrelationship is. So the Gemara continues and makes the following statement. Rabbi Kiva said, before I saw the Mokim HaMikdash today, I didn't know what's going to happen to us in the future. But now that I saw the Nevuah of Zechariah, of the total destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, lock, stock, and barrel, everything was plowed asunder, I therefore know that ultimately the Nevuah of Zechariah, of Geula, redemption, and the rebuilding of Eretz Israel will take place as well. It's the Nevuah of Yeshayahu. And therefore, if that's the case, I'm not crying, because I know Rabbi Kiva was the ultimate eternal optimist. This korban will turn into a geula, and that's what I'm smiling about. The nitzias of Klal Yisrael is guaranteed. And the Gemara tells us after he said that, the other Tanaim said to Rabbi Kiva, Nechamtonu, Nechamtonu, you gave us Necham. This is the Gemara. But even after I quote the Gemara, there's one problem. I still don't understand, nor should you understand, what in the world does Korban mean to guarantee a Geula to take place? The two opposite ends of the spectrum. Why is the total destruction of the Makom HaMikdash a guarantee to Geula? This is the million-dollar question. I want to share with you this morning, and this is one of the most important parts of my drasha this morning, is the perush given by the Beis HaLevi, the great-great-great-grandfather of my Rebbe, of Salavation Zatzal. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Volozhiny Yeshiva, the Yosef Dov HaLevi Salavation, from the great father, he was the father of the Rav Chaim of Bris. And in his Sefer, in the Shelos and Shuvos, He has an unbelievable perish of this Gemara that you'll be changed individuals once you hear it. So listen carefully, because I want to give you chizik. You have to have chizik to understand what's going on and how to deal with it. Says the Beis Halevi the following. If you want to know what's really going on over here and what Rabbi Akiva said and meant, there's one source I have to bring in. And I have to go to the source of the Bris Bein HaBesarim and understand what was the Bris Hashem made with Klal Yisrael. If you look in Pashas Lech Lecha, there are four parts of the Bris Bein HaBesarim. Number one, Hashem says to Avram, Al Kiva, do not be fearful. I'm your Magen, I'm your shield. What that means technically is Hashem says, I'm guaranteeing the Klal Yisrael total indestructibility. They might rachmanalakon kill millions of Jews throughout the ages, but Am Yisrael is the only nation on the face of this earth that Hashem promised divine hashgacha pratis, they are indestructible. If we weren't, we wouldn't be having the shiur here today. Our having the shiur today is a guarantee of this pasuk. Interesting enough, the Shemona Esrei, we say in the opening bracha, which is looked upon as one of the most important, how do we end off? Magen Avraham, the promise of indestructibility. That's part number one. Part number two, and this is very important. When it came to the infertility of Avram and Sarah, when Hashem promised them a child, Avram said, how is that physiologically possible? He took him outside. The Chazal interpret this to mean not only to look at the sky and the stars, but he said to Avraham, the second promise I have for Klal Yisrael is that you're going to survive as the Jews, Limala Miderech HaTeva, Michutz Limala MiTeva. The Gemara says it in Shabbos, Ein Mazal Yisrael. We're not subject to the natural resources of the world as the non-Jewish world is. You'll live on a physical level, Limala Miderech HaTeva. You'll survive, Limala Miderech HaTeva. You fight wars, it'll be Limala Miderech HaTeva. You think the concept of a Rabban Yad Miyatim of Hanukkah was an accident? You think Hakamas Adina 1948, where millions of Arabs surrounded Eretz Israel with the most sophisticated weaponry on the face of this earth, millions and millions and millions of Arabs out to kill and destroy the Medina in 1948 after Ben-Gurion declared this a state. They had all the weaponry they needed, the manpower. This actual Yishuv had less than 600,000 Jews, no tanks, no planes, no sophisticated weaponry. And everybody in the world bet, and this was told to Truman, don't worry about the Jewish problem, don't worry about us supporting the resolution to give them a state. The Arabs are angry at us. The Arabs will finish them off in a couple of days and the problem will be eliminated. But that's the machshav of the Goyish world. Rabbi's machshav is valid, ish, but sasa shemhi sakum. 2 years later on, they begged us for an armistice. The concept of Rabbi Miyad Miyatim, that Chazal tell us about Hanukkah, what happened in 1948 is, I won't even give the proportion, is larger and more powerful than the Rabbi Miyadatim going back to Hanukkah. And therefore, in our own tekufa of our life, we saw the Rabbi Miyatim, the Ma'ala Miderech HaTeva take place, and this is not something we should just ignore. All the major wars we had in Israel, the Six-Day War, can you explain it? What other country is attacked from all sides can complete the war in 6 days? It's impossible to comprehend. How many Balei Tshuva were created because of experiencing this? Where do we get the Kaya from? From the promise in the Bris Bein HaBesarim that you are going to live L'mayla B'derech HaTeva. That's promise number two. Promise number three, Hashem promised us Eretz Israel, and he delineates the 10 Canaanite nations that are inhabiting Eretz Israel. And Hashem says, you see where they are now? That's the land you're going to inherit at the end of time when Klal Yisrael gets that specific inheritance from me, of Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Chazal point out that the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael is not called merely a Yerusha. It's called a Marasha. The only other item we have that's called the Marasha, which is called the heritage, is Torah. Torah Tzivolon Moshe, Marasha Kehilas Yaakov. If you look in the beginning of Parshas Vaera, it says explicitly, our receipt of Eretz Yisrael is a Marasha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Marasha means not merely inheritance, because if you have a mere inheritance, when the children get hold of it, they can do whatever they want with it, and there's not necessarily need to leave over to the next generation if they really don't care. When you have something that's a Marasha, my Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik explained what does that mean? That it is a heritage, an inheritance of a heritage that you have a right to use and benefit from it, but you must maintain the shleimus of this marasha and pass it over to the next generation. That applies to Torah, and it applies to Eretz Yisrael. And that is why when it came to the question of land for peace, the Gedolim, who are basically holding by what I just told you, said, we can't give away any part of Eretz Yisrael to anybody else. The same way we can't give away any of the Torah to the Umas HaOlam. It's ours, it's our marasha, it's Netzach Netzachim, and therefore, Eretz Yisrael is Amarasha. What the Goyim think is irrelevant. They've tried to take it away from us, and they haven't succeeded, Baruch Hashem. So it's Amarasha. So I just mentioned three different parts of the Bris paper so far that we're experiencing now living in Eretz Yisrael. But there's one fourth part I have to mention that's going to be the major focus to answer, explaining Rabbi Kiva. The Torah tells us in Lech Lecha that the Rabban Hashem said to Klal Yisrael through Avram, my promises to you is not divine nepotism. You have to be zocha to have all of these things applied to you in their full capacity. And therefore, since Hashem saw there was some type of sin chesaron from the time of Avram at that point in time, they needed kapara, they were told you're going to have to go down to Golis for a certain period of time, ended up being Mitzrayim. But Hashem says, don't worry. After you go down there in this kapara sachet, you'll come back. In fact, I'll bring you back up to Eretz Yisrael. So you have concept of Golis and Geula mentioned as the fourth. That the fourth concept is the concept of Golis and Geula. How you conduct yourselves as Jews and Jewesses will depend whether you're in a Golis mode or a Geula mode. Now, after you hear that, you ask yourself a question. Rabbi Kiva wants to give nichum to everybody, and he's talking about these specific issues, and he quotes this pasuk. He's talking about Kulavin, he's talking about Geula. I understand that there's an ultimate Geula going to take place at the end, could be Menachem somebody. But he's also talking about Golus. How is the Maimer concerning the Golus and the going down and the subjugation? How is that a Nechama to Klal Yisrael? This is the million-dollar question the Beis Halevi deals with. And the answer he has, you have to listen closely because it relates to everybody in this audience and Klal Yisrael throughout the world. It's based upon a Ramban in Flemish that he quotes. The Ramban in Flemish at the end of the Fulkosai, dealing with the Tosafa, had the following pasuk. The Fulkosai Peret Chavav, pasuk Lamed Beis. The pasuk says, Hashimosi ani Esra Avetz. I'm going to make Eretz Yisrael desolate when you have Kurban Bayis Rishon taking place. V'shamu le'oyevechem hayoshvim ba. Not only will you find the land desolate, but any non-Jewish nation on the face of this earth that wants to come and replace you and live in the land of Eretz Yisrael instead of you, I am promising you now, they'll find the land desolate. They will not find the place inhabitable. They won't be able to set up their malucha there. And this is the divine promise Hashem gave to Klal Yisrael. Comes along the Ramban, and listen to what he says. The Ramban says, and he's quoting the Sifra, the Medrash Halacha on Sefer Vayikra. So this is a Tanaic source, Arish Labapet. Besura Taiva the Dairas. This pasuk is an incredible good tidings for the Jews for all generations. She'ein artzeinu mikabeles es oyaveinu. Our land can never ever accept our adversaries as residents in the land. Ki mi'oz yotzonu mimenu. From the time we first underwent the major galus from Eretz Israel, lo kibla umevelasham. No non-Jewish nation on the face of this earth was ever able to resettle the land successfully in place of Klal Yisrael. Kula mishtadlim lohoshiva. It doesn't mean they didn't try. They le'el yodam, but they were not successful. Says the Beis HaLevi, what is the Ramban telling us? That when the land was said to be in a state of shvama, total desolation, uninhabitable, of course, we didn't benefit momentarily, but the Rabbeinu Shalom made sure that no other Umma Velasha, whether it's Babylonia, Persia, coming basically to the concept of the Greeks, the Romans, nobody was ever able to kick us out of Eretz Israel and resettle it successfully in front of us. It was in a state of Shvama, which means there was no agricultural development. It was impossible. Okay? Why did the Rabbeinu Shalom do this? So says the Beis HaLevi, that the Rabbeinu Shalom wanted to show us that the reason I made it uninhabitable is because Golus is for the purposes of Kaparas Avinos. But I don't want to take the land away from you because I made a promise to the Bris Bein Abasarim, Eretzel is your Marash, it's going to be yours forever. I wanted to make it impossible for the Umas Olam to ever physically take it away from you, because they're not going to want to live there. If Chatz V'Sholom, it was hospitable to Goyish nations, and they would have inhabited the land, how could we ever gotten it back? But the fact that it was uninhabitable, and it was empty, and people didn't want to make this a place of their survival of the non-Jewish world, when the time of Geula took place, we didn't have too much opposition. We were able to come back, rebuild the land. So if that's the case, says the Beis HaLevi, the churban and the shemama is not just a punishment, but it's a bracha for the Jews. It's a nechama. The level of total destruction is a guarantee of what? Of redemption taking place. The chiddush of the Ramban says, and this is what Beis HaLevi says, is the pasuk in Yeshayahu. When a Rekiva came to the Makam HaMikdash and he saw the level of desolation, and it was the same desolation that happened at Churban Bayis Rishon, the same way the Babylonians could not settle there afterwards, he knew by the fact of the desolation of the Roman Empire, of this Makam HaMikdash, what they did, they can't settle and use this place anymore. And if that's the case, why did Hashem put it in the heads of these individuals to do what they did? Because Hashem wanted to ensure when the proper time comes, when the tshuva is done, when we return to HaKadosh Baruch and show our worthiness, we'll have the ability to return to Eretz Israel. So the ultimate Churban HaMakom is the guarantee to ultimate redemption. The pasuk in Yeshaya is exactly worded by Yeshaya HaNavi for this. When you see total destruction and elimination of the value parts of Eretz Israel and the buildings of Eretz Israel, that's a siman. It's not only a punishment momentarily, but it's a guarantee that we are going to return. Geula is definitely going to take place. The paradigm of the pasuk in Yeshaya, therefore, poses the total churban with total redemption. Now, why is this important? I'm going to give you two examples of this. On a historical level, going back to Churban Bayis Rishon and Sheni, something is quite unusual. We can understand them trying to get rid of the Jewish people from Eretz Israel, putting us in Golis, Rachman also doing other things. But you ask yourself a question, the Bayis HaRishon built by Shlomo was a magnificent edifice. Beautiful. And Chazal tell us when it comes to Bayis Sheni, which Hordis redid, the Gemara says in various places in Shas and Sukkah and other places, there was not an architectural temple of this stature built in any other part of the world. So you ask yourself the question. I understand they want to get rid of the Jewish people for whatever reason they have, anti-Semitism. Well, why destroy their temples?
Why not make it into an idolatrous temple, as the Greeks did momentarily when they captured Eretz Israel at that point in time?
Why did they destroy the temple by its reason by a sheni? It doesn't make sense, b'derech hateva.
The answer is the pasuk in that was quoted over here by Yeshayahu Navi, and the lumdis I taught you in the name of the Ramban. The Rabbanu should put it in the mind of these crazy people that the cinema calculus they have for the Jews is so severe, they're willing to bite their nose despite their face. I don't want them here. I'm going to destroy all the edifices and places that are beneficial. I can't use it. But this sin is so intense that they'll destroy it utterly, as if they're punishing us, not realizing they're punishing themselves as well. You see this concept of total destruction, which ultimately was a guarantee for ultimate reconstruction, the Gula. But I want to give you an example that you all experienced together with me a couple of years ago. Many, many years ago, I was called with 10 other Rabbanim, when we still had the Gaza Strip, to do a special mission coming from America to Eretz Israel, and there were bombs falling there at that point in time in the Yeshuvim. They wanted us to come as a mission of mercy and chizuk. The 10 Rabbanim of big shuls in America willing to risk their lives to go to all the communities in the Gaza Strip to show our chizuk, our love, our compassion, our concern for them. I remember when we went into the Gaza Strip, they put us in a bomb-proof bus. We had tanks and all different types of vehicles surrounding us from all sides. We went from yeshuv to yeshuv. We saw the beautiful yeshuvim, the beautiful Bate Knessios. We saw the agricultural complex there, a $1 trillion agricultural complex, which was incredible. They employed at that time about 30,000, 40,000 Arabs to work there and gave these people parnasa. And we saw it with our eyes. We experienced it. We even had some Arabs having an official lunch with us that were brought by the Israeli general there to speak to the Rabban to explain what was Gaza before the Jews came to Gaza and what happened afterwards. And this Arab had tears coming out of his eyes and said, "Before the Jews came back to Gaza, it was a sand dune. We could do nothing to cause the agricultural production to take place. But when they returned to Gaza, they made it into an oasis." That's Chazal's telling us. And there is a vast of davash is a bracha when Jews live on Eretz Israel. When Goyim displaces and want to live instead, it's in a state of shemam.
You are listening to Ben's Torah.
Why am I saying this to you? Was when a couple of years later on, Ariel Sharon decided, because of Land for Peace, to kick all the Jews out and give it over to the Palestinians as a gesture of Land for Peace. I remember when I was watching it, tears were coming out of my eyes. I still remember what the general told me, who was in charge of that specific area we had lunch with. He said the most strategic location in Eretz Israel is not Lebanon, where he was in control before. He sees this as being the most strategic location. If God forbid we would ever give it back, it would open up the entire Eretz Israel to all different types of acts of terrorism and barbarism, and that's what we have to hold on to. When I saw that that time Sharon giving it back, I realized the consequences. But what really got me and brought this Maimon Chazal to light is what happened here after they took all the Jews out, and I was crying bitterly. What did the Arabs do? Instead of saying, "Wow, we have all these built cities with magnificent houses. We have these synagogues that could be made into mosques. We have an agricultural phenomenon here worth trillions and billions of dollars. It can give parnasa to all the Arabs in that land, and they can make for themselves an oasis to live and have tremendous parnasa. The world doesn't have to support them." Within 24 hours, they destroyed every building, every synagogue, and an entire industrial complex of the agricultural production was torn asunder. Now, let me ask you a question. Does that make sense? Do you understand that? How incredibly crazy that is. How could that happen? The answer is this Maimon Chazal I just mentioned. We were forced to leave momentarily against our will.
But the Rabbanu Shalom put in the hearts and the mind of our adversaries, you don't want the Jews to live there. It's going to be Shemama for you, not an Eretz of Astolah B'Davash. And the same way, the crazy ancestors of them destroyed a magnificent Beis Hamikdash, Rishon Hashem, which they could have used. But they destroyed one because of anti-Semitic feelings. Hashem put it in their minds to act that way, to mekayim this pasuk. This happened in front of our eyes in our tekufa, to see how crazy people can be. Sin about kalkelas ashura. I said to myself, if that's the case, we're going to return to Gaza one day. We're going to rebuild all parts of Eretz Yisrael again. This is the haftaka that Yeshaya gave us, that Rabbi Kiva said to his fellow Tanoim, and when they heard this, they said to Rabbi Kiva, Nichamtanu, Nichamtanu. That is the pshat of the Gemara. That's the Metzius. Any churban they're doing to our Yeshuvim today, it will be rebuilt. And the Rabbanu Shalom will help it be rebuilt. Their Gaza Strip, what did they do with all the monies they received? They built thousands and thousands of crazy tunnels. It's unbelievable. I found a pasuk in Hazino that says upon Hamas, Hamas zochalei ofa. You look up the pasuk. Mamishka means Hamas, literally go in the dirt in the ground. That's the source of them using tunnels. It's a pasuk in Hazino. Look it up, you'll see what I mean. The fact of the matter is, what they're doing, whatever little structures they built, or economy they had in Gaza, they destroyed it with their own hands. Hamas caused it to be destroyed. It's mamish laid waste because of their machshavas and sinner for the Jewish people. It's unbelievable. But it's based upon this Maimon Chazal and this specific source. So this is the first message of consolation of Sefer Yeshayahu, that even ultimate korban is a simon of geula, of redemption. So that's why Chazal say on the various narratives of Churban and Sefer Yeshayahu, Kula Nechemtehi, because even the Churban is part of the Nichum when it comes to the ultimate Geula. That's point number one. Point number two is even equally important. Another pasuk in Yeshayahu Hanabi. This is a pasuk that's found, for those who want to look it up, in Yeshayahu Perek Samech Pasuk Habeis. It says, Amech Kulam Sadikim, La'olam Yirshu Aref, will always inherit the land. And then Hashem says in the next pasuk, Ani Hashem Be'ita Achishemet. I, Hashem, promise you the Gula will come at its proper time and even quicker. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Tzadiches asked the following question. Hashem's promising us Gula, but if it's going to be Be'ita, what does Achishemet mean? What it means to be quicker? And if there's no specific time, what will be the Akashen? I'll make it when you're ready to receive it. What's the meaning of these two terms? Believe it or not, the next two interpretation I'm giving you is an historical narrative of thousands of years, culminating in our generation, so listen very carefully. The Gemara says, when it comes to redemption, there is a divine plan like for everything else, but there are two types of geulot that can happen for Klal Yisrael at the end of days, when Mashiach comes. One's called a gula of Zochul, where we're spiritually worthy, where Klal Yisrael is reserving Torah and Mitzvahs, Rova the Jews are from pious Jews and Jewesses. That's called the gula shez Zochul. There's another type of gula. As we come to the end of time, and Klal Yisrael have not done Shuvah, and there are singular parts of Klal Yisrael, a certain percentage, that are rebellious, that still don't want to accept Hashem and Torah and Mitzvahs. But Hashem made a promise in the Torah, multiple times, I'm going to redeem you at the end of time. So the pasuk in Yecheskel, which refers to this, says, Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, I have to redeem you because if I don't redeem you, it's a chil Hashem that I left my amanifka totally forsaken in the world. I have to redeem you. It's a concept of being the chil Hashem Shemayim that my amanifka is allowed to stay in Golus. So therefore, lamani eseh, for the sake of kiddush Hashem Shemayim, even though you're not worthy yet, I will redeem you and bring you back to Eretz Israel, and you rebuild Eretz Israel, and you basically restore the entire Yishuv, and it will be once again an Eretz Zavas Chalav Davash. That's called by Chazal a Gula Shalozach. Now, what's the difference? This is important between these two Gulas. The paradigm example of the Gula Shezachu is Yitzias Mitzrayim. It was Lamaila Miderech HaTeva. Through HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there was no Malach or any other agent involved in evil or Malach, we say in the Haggadah. It was a total supernatural event. Lock, stock, and barrel. Nisim and the flaws of what took place in the Makos. What happened on, you see, when it comes to Kriyas Yamsuf, Ananiya Kovid, the Mayim of Ber Mayim, the Mamin Ashramayim, it was supernatural. That's a Gula Shezafu. A Gula Shalozafu, the paradigm for that, is what happened post Purim in Persia. In Persia, we had a Gula take place after the Nisim of Purim, but listen what happened over there. The way that was orchestrated was by the heads of the Persian Empire, first Koresh, later on in a certain level at the end, Ashrerish, but most by Daryavish, his son. They gave us the right to return to the land of Eretz Israel. Not only did they give us the right, they gave us the resource, the political clout to get rid of all the opponents we had who didn't want us to return, and allowed us to reestablish the second commonwealth with a second base. They even gave us the materials and the money to accomplish this. Chazal tell us that Klaizos HaKaras Atov to Persia was on the eastern gate entering into the Makam HaMikdash. There was a big plaque of Shushan HaBira as a HaKaras Atov to the Persian Empire for what they did to facilitate us returning. Gula Shalazaka is called Berishian HaMalchus, with the permission of the non-Jewish world who are geopolitically in control of the situation. It's Bederech HaTeva. You see miracles behind the scenes, but it's hidden. Nisim Nistarim. So the two types of Gulubos. Okay? Now, with this in mind, if it's a Gula Shezafu, Achishena, I can make it take place even quicker. If, however, it's a Gula Shalozafu, and I promised you a gula, and if not, it's a chil Hashem, I have to be Kaddish Rim Shemayim. It's a gula beat that's going to take place, whether the world likes it or not, whether you're worthy or not. It's going to happen. It's going to be. You'll see why I'm mentioning this. Now, historically, I'm going to go over quicker. To the 1100s, the Ramban in his parish to Shir HaShirim, the Radak in his parish to Sefer Tehillim, they both dealt with the following question. What do you think is going to be the format of Gula when the Mashiach comes? Both the Ramban and the Radak independently said, unfortunately, we see it's going to be a Gula Shalozachu, the Rishion HaMalchus. The Goyisha world will give it back to us. Now, when they lived, there was no Goyisha world, there wasn't the United Nations, there wasn't the League of Nations. We hold it's going to be Berishion HaMalchus. Who? I don't know. But that was their Ruach HaKadosh, that's what they said in the Ksavim. Skipping to the 1700s, we come to the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was a major advocate of his people returning to Eretz Israel, rebuilding Eretz Israel. And after he did it, the Baal Shem Tov sent his Talmidim. The Talmidim asked the Gra, Rebbe, what type of Gula is this going to be? A Gula Shalozachu. A Gula Shalozachu. Why in the world did the Gaon, if he felt that way, what gave him a hint that now is the time to pick yourselves up from Europe and return to Eretz Israel? So there's another Gemara in Mesaptis Sanhedrin, same Daf Tzadiches, who talks about what is the most powerful sign of redemption for Klal Yisrael. So he quotes a pasuk from Yecheskel HaNavi. When Hashem tells Eretz Israel to the mountains and to the fields, produce your fruit, produce your agriculture, make the land instead of being Shemama and Eretz Avas, Chalavu Davash, there's no greater symbol that we're going from Golis to Geula, and it happened during the time of the Vilna Gaon. He saw what's happening in Eretz Israel. The swamp lands were now being conquered. It was now being agriculturally developed by singular Jews. He saw the Shemama turning into Pirayon. That talk of the Gemara based upon a pasuk in Yechesed was taking place. Hashem showing us there's a Haskalas Geula. We got to go back. Since it's considered Shalozachu, it has to be done by human efforts. It's not going to be a gula like Mitzrayim. It's a gula like the time of the Persian gula. So the Zophel gula, Berishim HaMalchus. Now the Malchus hadn't told him anything yet. But the concept of going back and showing your establishment to redevelop the land, the Gaon said is Afiyu. Now this is interesting. The Talmidim asked their Rebbe, who is going to lead this movement?
Who's going to lead the movement? Who's going to be Mi Yoshe Barash? So he says, I found in the Zohar. Listen to this. This is going to put a little chill down your spine. B'nei banav shel ha'erev rav. The Einiklaf of the rebellious Jews, the Erev Rav, which means non-religious Jews will be involved in this movement. I'm saying this for a reason, because there are people who wanted to reject the return to Zion because it was people who are not religious. The Gaon said that's what Hashem wants it to be done. We can explain it, but he wants this to be something that the whole Ummah wants to do. And if the only Zuchus they have is their love of wanting to return to Eretz, even though it might be not be Shomer Torah in any other area, an Abba, a desire to risk your life to rebuild Eretz Yisrael, is a schus for you to have this aliyah take place on some level. This is an important fact to remember, and this is the Vilna Gaon who said if you want to quote it. Now, let me skip in history because I have limited time. The real redemption that we're talking about, Gula Shuvah Zochel, was realized in the 1900s, and I want you to listen to these dates, which is very important. The first major activity which showed this is the Gula Shel HaZochel, happened on November 2nd, 1917, the Balfour Declaration. Rothschild received a letter from Arthur James Balfour, who was Secretary of State of Foreign Affairs in England, which said the following: The Majesty's government views with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national homeland for the Jewish people, and will use the best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this objective. This set into place that England, who had geopolitical control of Palestine at that time, because and there was no thing this happened by itself, there was a lot being done. But at the end, the king said, I want to do it. This is the first, what we call, Rishon HaMalchus, allowing us to return. But what empowered this statement of England was what happened in July 24th, 1922. The League of Nations, the forerunner of the United Nations. We now had a group of nations, very powerful nations, coming together, and they said, you know what we're going to do? England started the process, but we want to complete it. And there, if I have in my hand something you can get online, the League of Nations Palestine Mandate, dated July 24th, 1922. What they want to do is now implement what England said they're going to do and give Palestine back to the Jewish people. It's incredible. You can't have a greater Rishon HaMalchus than this specific statement. Later on, 1947, when it comes to that, November 29th, 1947, the UN vote, which today would be inexplicable, incomprehensible, but they got the majority of the General Assembly to vote to give the land back to the Jews. As Rav Soloveitchik always said in his Mamorim, he must have had Hashem standing at the podium, pulling out the ropes and each and every member, because if you think of the UN mail today, this can never, ever, ever suck. There will never, ever be. So that was a miracle that took place at that time. But all of this is Rishon HaMalchus. How did the Gedolim of that time react to the events of the early 1900s? So over here, I want you to record this because you have to know this. Because if you listen to people who don't know what they're talking about, they'll give you a different piece of information. The first Gadol who gave this tremendous recognition as Rishon HaMalchus was Rav Meir Simcha Devinz, the Arsameach. One of the greatest Litvish Gedolim of that time, and everybody will admit to that, he says, this is the key of Vozothu, Rishon HaMalchus, that's what's happening. We have to mekabel it, go back to Eretz Yisrael and rebuild it, as the Gaon saw 200 years earlier. In the Hasidish world, this you have to know, the greatest Hasidish Gedol of that time, Rav Avraham Bornstein, was the Avnei Nezer, a Sefer alumnus of Shas, Shelis, and Shuvis, that not only Hasidish have to learn, but in the Rosh Yeshivas of the most Litvish Yeshivas, who doesn't learn with an Avnei Nezer? The greatest Gadol of the Hasidish world. He told his Talmidim, it's time to return. This is Rishon HaMalchus. Hashem's giving it back to us. We got to go and basically buy land and Eretz Yisrael and return. The next Gadol, the Chafetz Chaim. When the Chafetz Chaim heard what's going on and he was told the information by his son, he says, if that's the case, the Rabbeinu Shalom is giving us back Eretz Yisrael, Barishi and HaMalchus. And if that's the case, this is Ikfas of the Mishika. We got to buy land to return and rebuild Eretz Yisrael. How many of you have heard of the Ostrov Sereva? The Ostrov Sereva was the Tzadik Hadar of that generation who fasted 40 years that the Churban should not take place of the Second World War.
This tzaddik was, besides the tzaddik and the big Hasidish Rebbe, was an incredible Talmid Chacham. And when he was approached by anti-Zionists to not allow this to happen and to protest, he made the following comment I want you to remember. He says, when it comes to the concept of every nation on the face of this earth, the Rebbe Hashem compares each and every nation to a specific animal in the world. We Jews are compared to a Yonah. But Malchus Edom is compared to a Chazir, to a pig. Why are they called a Chazir? Believe it or not, listen to what he says. He quotes a Medrash Chazal. This is a Medrash Chazal that says, why are they called a Chazir? She'osid Malchus Edom lachzir atar lebala. There's going to come a time that the Edomite Empire is going to return the crown to the heads of those who deserve it, and therefore return to them what belongs to them. What does that mean? It means that Britain, which was a Christian country, that country representing the Christian world, were the ones who first said, we're going to return Eretz Israel to the Jewish people. The League of Nations merely followed up on that specific pronouncement. What we have in front of us now is the key of that Nebuah, that Edom, which initially was a Roman Empire, became then the Christian Roman Empire, because one of the Caesars converted to Christianity. We now see in front of our eyes they're returning Eretz Israel to the Torah of Abayla. They're giving us back our crown, Eretz Israel. If that's the case, this is a Nebuah. We're living in a Nebuah. You're going to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu how to run his world. Who's the one involved in bringing this thing to fruition? HaBishluch HaMakom. Because if that's the case, you have to support it, you have to mechazik it, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. The reason I'm saying this is you all heard other opinions. But I wanted to hear what the Kren Bekoko of the Gedolei Hadar of the Litvisha and the Hasidic world said when it came to their response to this. When it came to the 1948 to 1947 phenomenon of the UN vote, Rav Zevin Zatzal, Greg Godwin, Eretz Yisrael, Rav Soloveitchik both said, we now see once again the Rishon HaMalchus continuing despite the Holocaust in between. That Korban is now just the bringing of the ultimate Gulo, and therefore 75 years after us, at the Hakamas HaMedina, look at the beautiful land we have, and that is the Vatz Cholav HaDavash, a land that not only is beautiful in its agricultural capacities, we have now become the technological genius of the world. The Chasam Sofer says something quite interesting. When the Pasuk says, Ki mitzion teitzei Torah, udvar Hashem Yerushalayim, he says it not only means we're going to become the religious source of spirituality throughout the world, we're going to be a concept of the Or LaGoyim in spirituality, but the Jews, to show that the Am HaNivkar are going to be the greatest inventors, the greatest creators. We're going to give the world the greatest medical technology, the greatest scientific technology, to allow mankind to be raised to a new level of survivability in the world in which we live. The fact everybody has to come to Arizal to find the refuah for this and to find the technical benefit for that. This is going to be a Kiddush and Shemayim that they realize that you need Eretz Yisrael for technology to thrive, survive, and be created for the survival of the world at large. I still remember that when Netanyahu came many, many years ago to the UN, the United Nations, as he's going to be coming very shortly, he already got on the plane, say goodbye to Biden, and he came at that time. He went in front of the General Assembly. He says, I don't understand all of you. Do you realize how much technology, how much medical phenomena, how much of the benefits you have in this world were created by the Jewish people in Eretz Israel? Why in the world do you hate us so much? Without what we created, you cannot survive here. And he says, if you want to know how serious this is, you want to cause us to be boycotted. If you want to boycott us, I want you to know the following. One of the major companies in Eretz Israel is Intel. All the chips in all your cell phones that you're using have this Intel chip. If you really want to boycott us, there's a big space over here. Throw all your phones in front of us. We'll make a fire. We'll destroy it because you don't realize what you're trying to destroy. You're destroying a nation that helps the world at large, makes the technology and the medical apparatus to help the world. Who doesn't use Waze over here? Where did that come from?
didn't come from America, it came from Eretz Yisrael. The fact of the matter is, everything the world has is the bracha come from Eretz Yisrael. When a nation has a terrible tragedy, who's the first country to send people, aid workers, to help those people? In fact, when Iran had a tragedy, an earthquake a couple of years ago, Israel said, we're willing to come to help. Iran said, I'd rather my people die than have Israel to come. But they offered. The chesed, the tzedakah, the love, the concern that the Jewish people give is a kiddush shem shemayim. And Chazal say, if that's the case, the reason Hashem had Eretz Yisrael created now, even though there's still a conflict between the religious and the non-religious, the same machlokas that existed at Hakamas HaMedina has not abated in 75 years. And that's the trouble we have today. And I hope in Mi'atz Hashem will find a solution that's amicable to everybody. But one thing is for sure, that according to Chazal, that Eretz Yisrael was supposed to be a place ultimately causing Kiddush Shem Shemayim, we see it happening in our Tekufa. It's an Eretz Zavatz Chalav Udavash. Ki Mitziyah Teitz Yitar Dava Hashem Yerushalayim. We're living in a period of Gula Shelo Zafu, but guess what? The Rambam says, ultimately, even Spas Lo Zafu, it will end that all of Klai's will turn to HaKadosh Baruch. The amount of frum people that are basically not only coming as frum people to Eretz Yisrael or being born here, but are becoming Baal Tshuva is simply incredible. The statistics we have today is, in a couple of years, the majority population in Eretz Yisrael is going to be religious Jews, no matter which denomination they come from. We're going to have the majority vote in Eretz Yisrael. Will give us an ability to manipulate a little more than we have today. We are seeing Eretz Yisrael undergoing a major, major overcoming of all the obstacles. But that does not mean this is a Gula Shelo Zachu, it's going to be easy. The Gemara compares a Gula Shelo Zachu to an angelic human being flying in the air miraculously. I don't know if that's allowed, but flying miraculously. What's a Gula Shelo Zachu? A poor person riding on a chamar where you feel every bump in the road. They're ups and they're downs. We're now in a down period. Well, we've been to the ups, but one thing is for sure, that the ups have downs, but the downs have ups, and ultimately we're going to go up, up, up until the final gula. The thing I want to leave you with, therefore, is in the midst of destruction of Korban, you have the seeds of gula. We're seeing it now. We've seen it from the time of Hakamas HaMedina. The Gedolim made their pronouncements. Torah is growing in Eretz Yisrael on levels that never existed in Eretz Yisrael in all of its history, as Baruch Weinert said. You're living in a Tekufa, your Bubbas and Zaydas were chalishing, they should witness. We're witnessing it now. Do not give up hope. But the only thing we need is the last message of Yeshaya. And that is, it says, See him b'mishmei tipadah v'shaveh b'tzedakah. You want the final Gula to take place. We need Eretz Yisrael to try to run on some level of mishpat, of Torah halacha. We need that to be one of the makaros. But you need also the concept of chesed, which means there has to be loving kindness and peace between Jew and Jew. Without achdus of Klal Yisrael, we're not going to have a kapara for sinas chinam with avas achinam to cause the gula. It says by Yibeshur Melech, when? V'sasef Rosh Ha'am Yaka Shifti Yisrael. The segula for redemption is achdus. You have to have love and compassion, even those who disagree with us. Hashem will give us the siyata d'shmaya to see the final gula b'mi'ash v'shich v'tzakenu with the building of the Beis HaMikdash, eradication of the Shibet HaMaltios, and the ultimate brachas of the Torah b'makuyim, as Hashem promised in the Torah.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.